Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 25th, 2015. One South Sudanese cleric says the Pope's historic visit to Africa this week will have an impact on South Sudan.
This is our hope also that the coming of the Pope will also mark a new beginning for the East African countries, for South Sudan in particular. That will mark a new beginning, it will mark a new boost for all the initiatives for goodness initiatives.
And women kick off 15 days of activism to shine light on unreported violence against women and girls in South Sudan.
When you experience violence, you should be able to report it either to your brother, either to your sister. Let somebody know that you're going through this violence.
We'll have this story and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Pope Francis has arrived in Kenya for the first stop of his three-nation tour. The pontiff is also scheduled to visit Uganda and the Central African Republic. VOA correspondent Jill Craig was on hand in Nairobi when the Pope arrived. She describes to VOA's Joe DiCapua what she saw.
Probably thousands of Kenyans who had lined the route from the airport to State House, where the Pope was headed to after he landed. People were very, very excited. I mean, even non-Catholics, non-Christians, very excited the Pope had chosen Kenya as the first stop on his first Africa tour. You know, there were people dancing, there were people singing Catholic worship songs. Traffic was completely stopped, so people were standing on top of minibuses, sort of standing on top of the motorbikes, hoping to get a glimpse of the Pope as he came by. So I can tell you that the mood was very, very festive. The other thing I noticed was that each time a car would come by, for example, when the police motorcade or when even an ambulance or a police car would drive by, people were cheering, you know, I think just sort of thinking, oh, the Pope is coming next. So I can say that everyone was very excited. And when the Pope did roll by, you know, he was waving and people were just very, very jubilant. So I can say that Kenyans are pretty excited about this visit.
What are the main issues that the Pope is expected to discuss?
Many of the same issues that he did in D.C., although I will say that there's a few other ones for Kenya. He's expected to address climate change, which, as you know, he mentioned several times on his U.S. tour, and so he will be stopping by the United Nations Environment Program tomorrow, actually, to talk with officials there. So climate change is one issue. He's going to be talking with a group of interreligious leaders as well. So we've got Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, and Protestants, as well as Catholics, will be meeting with him tomorrow. And then also he's got a stop scheduled in the Kangeni slum on Friday morning. And that one I think is particularly poignant here because the Pope has made his humility such a founding part of his papacy. And, you know, I think that the way that he has sort of lived a more humble lifestyle really appeals to a lot of people here who are experiencing poverty firsthand. So the fact that he's going to a slum with, I think it's an estimated 200,000 people live in Kangeni in a very crowded, congested, smaller space, relatively speaking. You know, that means a lot to people there. And when I spoke with some of them the other day, the funny thing is when you ask them, how is the Pope doing? Instead of talking about the bigger issues of what he's done, you know, a lot of people mention that they're thankful because the government has come in and paved the roads and their security is better because of the immediate impact from the Pope coming. So I think that there's a lot of reasons why people are excited about him coming.
That's VOA's correspondent Jill Craig in Nairobi speaking to Joe DiCapua about the Pope's visit to Kenya. South Sudanese Catholics are hopeful that the Pope's trip is an opportunity to mark a new beginning for initiatives of goodness and peace in South Sudan. The Vice Chancellor of the Catholic University in South Sudan, Father Matthew Pagan, says the Pope's visit is a blessing to the East African nations.
You know, Pope Francis has been very strong on the issues of peace, and he has really talked hard about the question of violence. Violence as a violation of the dignity of human person created in the image of God, and how the people who are really committing violence are really working on the side of evil. They are not promoting anything of God and anything of human progress. He has been very strong on that, on the issues of violence. In one of the statements, he says, violence disfigures the image of God in the human person. Yeah. So we really pray, we really we are very happy that it's coming, and it's coming will really boost the initiative for peace, both in various places in East Africa, but in particular in our country, South Sudan.
What does the Pope and his leadership mean for a country like South Sudan?
Oh, it's a big sign of encouragement and hope. The presence of the Pope always brings us a renewed hope of that things can get better. You know, I compare it to a visit of John Paul II in Khartoum, when he came to Khartoum in 1993. You know, for us who were in Khartoum at the time, suffering from the war and all the problems we faced in Khartoum, the coming of the Pope was a new beginning for us in Khartoum. And from that time onward, things began to improve for us who lived the events in Khartoum at the time. This is our hope also, that the coming of the Pope will also mark a new beginning for the East African countries, for South Sudan in particular. That will mark a new beginning, it will mark a new boost for all the initiatives for goodness, initiatives for well-being in our countries, and initiatives for peace in our country, in particular South Sudan.
What do you think is the biggest lesson that the Pope can take from the people of South Sudan and from the history of South Sudan itself?
I think the biggest thing is really perseverance that the Pope can take from. Our people, if you see our history, the whole history of perseverance, since, I don't know, you go back how many years behind. Yeah. Perseverance and resilience. People suffer, but they are always patient, and the people who never lose hope that things can change to better.
The Pope has faced criticism from many who think that he is too progressive and lenient on social issues like divorce and homosexuality. Do you worry that this will shadow his efforts to connect with the African people, in particular South Sudanese?
I think the most important issue now with us is the question of the family that has displaced children, that has got children dying from war, that has got people dying from sicknesses. I think that is not the real message. The real message is the human person born in the family, and the children, the women, all these people who are suffering. I think that's what he will focus. The refugees who are in the camps, the people who are dying of hunger, the people who are sick in hospitals and they don't have medicine. The people who are in displaced camps and they don't have medical attention. I think these are like the issues really the Pope will focus on.
That's Father Matthew Pagan speaking from WOW with VOA's Ayen Bior. South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makuei says the advance team from the SPLM in opposition and the former detainees will not visit Juba on Thursday as planned. Makuei said the government cannot implement the peace agreement without the presence of the SPLM IO officials and the former detainees.
The former detainees were supposed to be arriving tomorrow, but unfortunately the IGAD did not send them the tickets up to now. In case they receive the tickets now, then they may arrive tomorrow.
John Luke just told the media that the government in Juba refused to purchase their tickets.
We are not under duty to buy them their tickets. It is the duty of the IGAD to send them tickets. We are not under duty to transport the SPLM IO to Juba. It is the IGAD that is responsible for that. Our task, our responsibility starts at the airport upon arrival. We receive them and accommodate them, transport them, do whatever, render them all the required services, but not to transport them.
And IGAD is also saying that it is the responsibility of the warring parties to ensure that they implement the peace agreement.
If it is the responsibility of the warring parties, let each party transport itself into Juba.
But how will they do that when they don't have the money?
Well, we don't... If it is the responsibility of the parties, of the warring parties, then each party is supposed to transport itself to Juba. And from the Juba airport, international airport, we will receive them and accord them and render to them all the necessary services are required.
And what was the significance of this visit tomorrow by the former detainees? What is the importance of their visit?
So I don't know what is the importance, because what they came for, this is supposed to be an advanced team. Unfortunately, it's not an advanced team. It is the whole team minus the leader of the team.
What was the advanced team supposed to come and do in Juba?
The advanced team is supposed to come in a small number so that we come and discuss and resolve some of the outstanding issues.
And what are some of these outstanding issues?
I think that is irrelevant.
Some of the deadlines that you and the rebels agreed on have passed.
The agreement says they shall be in Juba in mid-November. Before that, we agreed that they should be sending us the list of their delegation so that we make the necessary arrangements for their mobility and accommodation. They did not send us the list in time. So we told them, we wrote to them and told them that we are extending your time of arrival here to the 26th, and please write to us, give us the list of your advance teams in time so that we can make the necessary arrangements. Not that only, but IGAD also wrote to them, informing them to submit their list before the 23rd. It was only yesterday that we received the list of the FDs. But up to this moment, we have not received the list of the IROs.
And how does that impact on the implementation of the peace agreement?
We are already behind schedule, if you are talking about the impact. As the government of South Sudan, we are supposed to receive our brothers and sisters with whom we have signed the agreement so that they join us and start the implementation of agreement from this end. Now, the chairperson of JEMEC, of Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, is already in Juba. And we will have the first sitting of JEMEC in Juba on the 27th. And in case they don't come, then definitely we will not be in a position to proceed. That will be very unfortunate.
That's South Sudan's Information Minister and Government Spokesman, Michael Makwe, speaking to me from Juba this past hour. Lawmakers who served in the first Jonglei State Legislative Assembly are relieved to hear that the state has decided to pay their benefits. Governor John Kong told lawmakers on Monday that his administration recently borrowed nearly 8 million South Sudanese pounds to pay the lawmakers' benefits.
Governor John Kong says for the last 10 years, the state government has not paid any annual or post-services benefits to lawmakers who served in the 2005 to 2009 parliament. But now, he says, the state is ready to settle all payment dues.
3 months ago, we borrowed 7.8 million South Sudanese pounds from the National Minister of Finance to pay members of the First Assembly. This loan is being repaid by installment of slightly over 844,000 South Sudanese pounds monthly and will continue until May 2016.
Governor Kong says paying the lawmakers' benefit is one of the several economic issues his administration has been struggling with over the last 2 years. Kong says he is glad to finally resolve the issues over unpaid benefits.
I'm glad, and I hope you all do, that what we have managed after one long decade to bail out subsequent administration in Jonglei State by paying whose right were delayed.
Jonglei State Assembly Speaker Peter Deng Agwer praises the governor for handling the issue.
Your intervention into the solution to remedy extinction of such an amount, which could in turn create anxiety between the legislature and executive, since further decentralization is soon going to be implemented, there shall be no any other body to pay it.
Agwer pointed out that lawmakers now serving in the state legislative are expecting to be paid more than 6 million South Sudanese pounds in benefit for the years between 2010 and 2015. Peter Cholwal, former Speaker of the Jonglei State Assembly, explained why the benefit will be paid to former lawmakers.
When the government was formed in 2010, I think the government was unable to provide accommodation to the chairperson for the specialized committee, including the deputy speaker. And also, they were lacking also the cars. They don't have cars. And that is why these rides were calculated, multiplied by these years, and then these are the money were paid to the members. So it is not post-service benefits. These are entitlement that are supposed to be paid when they were holding the position.
Well, says the bulk of the benefits being paid are entitlement that were supposed to be paid for those lawmakers serving as ministers, House speakers or chairpersons of parliamentary committees. Well, note that former state lawmakers who were appointed to serve in the state government after the 2010 elections were paid their full services benefit.
Early in 2010, they presented their case, and I think several times it was presented to the Council of Ministers to be resolved. But there was a dispute between the two levels of the government, who is supposed to pay, because the last government that was led by the Minister of Wall referred this case to be solved by the national government.
Some lawmakers who serve in the past parliament says they have received their benefits. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, women in South Sudan start a week of awareness. That story is coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what has been your biggest challenge?
I work in a corporate organization and I have 4 kids. My biggest challenge is, leaving them and getting a good person to take care of them. This has really been my biggest challenge.
I'm heartbroken. I don't know how to defend myself. Like, if I'm annoyed, I always cry. I cannot speak out what pains me. Instead, I keep it inside.
During my childhood, I was raised with my mother alone, without my father. So I had that challenge of having two parents together at the same time, to have that parenthood living where your father is here, your mother is here. So that life really disturbed me a lot.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Many cases of gender-based violence occur each year in South Sudan, but the vast majority of them go unreported. Rape, forced marriages of girls to older men, and early marriages continues despite efforts by local authorities to stop them. Today, women across South Sudan have kicked off a 15-day period of activism. They are demanding that girls be allowed to go to school and for women to be educated about their rights. Philip Thornaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Women at a public event in Wau mark the start of the 15 days of activism by ululating as police ban entertains guests. Activities like this one are happening today across the country to raise awareness about women and children who are raped, abused or forced to marry men they do not love. Sometimes they have never met before. Josephine Chandiru is a program coordinator for Steward Women, a group that promotes justice for women and girls. Chandiru says rape and early marriages are very common in South Sudan.
We also have forced abortion, which is something that is coming now. When a girl gets pregnant, the parents try to see how they can force the child out of her, because either they don't like the man, or the man is very poor, or he's ugly. That is a gender-based violence on the girl herself. So there is also rape. Rape is also very rampant, but it's not being reported.
Chandiru says her organization encourages the victims of gender-based violence to seek help.
We are opening referral systems. By referral systems, I mean when you experience violence, you should be able to report it either to your brother, either to your sister. Let somebody know that you're going through this violence. Then this person can report it either to police or to hospital or to court so that you receive some care.
Chandiru says the overwhelming majority of cases of gender-based violence go unreported in South Sudan. Voila Philip, the director of gender at Western Bahr al-Ghazal State's Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, agrees. She says her ministry has recorded more than 100 cases of gender-based violence in the state this year alone.
So far, Gender Office, together with social workers in the ministry, of gender. State Minister of Gender, hospital, police, SPUs, and partners has successfully managed to handle a number of 123 cases under of gender-based violence related issues through providing psychosocial support services by using proper steps of referral.
Philip says communities across South Sudan are more aware than they have been in the past years of the need to report violence against women and girls. Regina Osa Lullo, the Director General at the National Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, says the Child Act of 2008 clearly states that a girl under 18 years of age is a child and should not be married.
Unfortunately, this has not been implemented fully, but this is the right time, as I indicated, that the civil society and the NGOs and UN agency and the government will go flat down to educate the community and the chiefs and everybody so that they know and realize the danger of marrying a young girl below the age of 17.
Lulo says educating girls will help them to learn how to stand up for their rights. She says more than 80% of South Sudanese women do not know how to read or write, a big hindrance when a woman is trying to press charges against a man for rape or post-marriage. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
Demo Silva Aurelio contributed to this report from WOW. The World Food Programme office in Sudan recently received a donation of $300,000 from the Republic of Korea to fight moderate and severe malnutrition among pregnant mothers and children. WFP says thousands of malnourished pregnant women in Sudan give birth to malnourished children each year. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayen Bior has this story from Washington.
Sudan's WFP donor relations specialist Esme Conway says the money from South Korea will be used to buy super cereals, which are specifically designed to help prevent malnutrition. She says acute malnutrition among children and their mothers continues to be a large concern for aid workers in Sudan.
The Republic of Korea's contribution is particularly important because undernourished mothers are more likely to give birth to underweight babies. And so by trying to carry out this preventative treatment, it also tries to contribute to reduce stunting within the country.
Conway says for the next month, the aid will help at least 90,000 children and pregnant women in Sudan. She says WFP is especially concerned about levels of malnutrition in Darfur.
There's around 5.2 million people who will receive WFP's assistance across Sudan. 3.6 million of this total are beneficiaries are in Darfur. And of these 3.6 million that are in Darfur, 1.6 million are internally displaced people.
According to the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, at least 1.2 million Sudanese under the age of 5 are severely malnourished. Conway says WFP is working to assist more than 5 million people in need over the next 2 years, which includes 1.6 million internally displaced people.
We are carrying out nutrition and programs, and this particular contribution will be used to procure super cereal, which is a particular nutrient which is used to prevent moderate acute malnutrition in children and pregnant and lactating women.
Conway says the Republic of Korea has long been a big supporter of WFP's nutrition efforts in Sudan, including WFP's cash and food voucher program. She says the country has donated more than $12 million since 2012. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Pope Francis is beginning his first official tour of Africa in Kenya. The pontiff will also make stops in Uganda and the Central African Republic. He arrived at Jomo Kenyatta Airport outside Nairobi today, where he was greeted by a group of dignitaries and the faithful. The pope is expected to attend a ceremony at the State House, where he will meet with President Uhuru Kenyatta and a group of diplomats. Tomorrow, the Pope holds an interfaith meeting at the Vatican's diplomatic mission in the Kenyan capital. Later in the day, he will conduct a mass at the University of Nairobi. On Friday, the Pope, who has consistently called on the world to help the underprivileged, will visit with the poor in Nairobi's Kangemi slum. In his later stops, he is scheduled to tour a shrine to Christian martyrs in Uganda and to visit a mosque and a refugee camp in the Central African Republic. During his trip, the pontiff is expected to highlight the effects of climate change, having noted previously that the underprivileged are disproportionately affected by changes in weather patterns. South Sudanese clerics are keeping a close eye on the Pope's visit. Father Matthew Pagan, vice chancellor at South Sudan's Catholic University in Wau, says he sees the Pope's visit as an opportunity to mark a new beginning for initiatives of goodness and peace in South Sudan and elsewhere. Government spokesman Michael McQuay says the advance team from the SPLM in opposition and the former detainees of South Sudan will not arrive in Juba tomorrow as scheduled. He says governments there cannot implement the peace agreement without the presence of the SPLM-IO and the former detainees. And finally, gender-based violence is still a common occurrence in South Sudan. Women activists say the vast majority of cases go unreported. Rape, forced marriages of girls to older men, and early marriages continue unabated, even though some local authorities try to stop them. Today, women across the country are launching 15 days of activism against gender-based violence. They're demanding that girls be allowed to go to school and stay in school, and for women to be educated about their rights to report crimes such as rape and forced marriages. Josephine Chanderu, program coordinator for Steward Women, a group that promotes justice for women, says because rape and early marriages are so common, girls and women often have forced abortions. She says parents of girls try to force the unborn baby out because either they don't like the man or he is poor or ugly. She says rape is rampant but is not reported in South Sudan. Chanderu says her organization encourages the victims of gender-based violence to seek help. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Jain Gidam by Richard Badabu from Yambio. We have been listening to Richard Badagbo with that song, Jain Gidam. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.